Take it away, Derek. What's your question?
Why do you guys talk about comics so much?
Comic books.
Motherfucker, do you
read them?
18 years. Toothbrush is still fresh.
Did they have sex? Because, I mean, She-Hulk, you know.
Damn it, Tony. We went an entire episode without mentioning Maggot, and then you ruined it.
Comic books.
Motherfucker, do you
read them?
Batman's got his little fishbowl on his head, but Superman doesn't.
Cyclops was right.
Except when he was wrong.
Master Bruce, you are calm.
I'm going to silently judge all of you.
Shut up, Beast. Shut up.
Like, I've read it so many times, you know, it pretty much just crumbled in my hands.
Come on, old chum.
Comic books.
Motherfucker, do you
read them?
See, I didn't hate Hellcat until you made me read this miniseries. It was just a joke, but you made it real, Justin.
No.
You made it real.
I prefer my Dazzler singing, like, Creedence Clearwater Revival songs at Australian bars.
Titty discs. And
that's what to be known as from now on. Like, I'm going to go into the Marvel Wikipedia and edit it, whatever it is.
The worst titty discs.
It doesn't get better than that.
Comic books.
Motherfucker, do you
read them?
Hey guys, welcome back to another fantastic, superrific episode of Fanholes Comics, motherfucker, do you read 'em? Hey, what's up guys? This is Derek WC. I'm going to be one of your super hosts tonight, but I am not alone. I am joined. I've got we almost have a fantastic four of podcasters, you might say. Why don't you guys give a shout out and let everybody know who's here tonight?
Hey, Uncle Ben, I wish Superman were real and not a cartoon. It's me, Mike.
Hey, this is Justin.
Hey, everybody, it's Tony, and just call the four. Don't need no more.
Yeah, so this is going to be a celebration of the 25th anniversary of Superman Fantastic Four. It was a Treasury-sized edition of a comic book and featured a crossover between DC and Marvel's characters, including Superman and, of course, the first family of the Marvel Universe, the Fantastic Four. The cover date was 1999. The on-sale date was March 31st, 1999. And the cover price was a whopping $9.95. Holy crap. And the title is The Infinite Destruction. The writer, penciler is Dan Jurgens. The inker is Art Tiber. Letterer, Bill Oakley. Colorist, Gregory A. Wright. Editor, Mike Carlin. And on the cover, it's Dan Jurgens layouts with Alex Ross paints. And the quick, simple, easy synopsis is... The original superhero teams with the first family of superheroics, the Fantastic Four, in an extra-sized Treasury Edition one-shot that finds Superman becoming the Herald of Galactus, featuring a cardstock cover penciled by Dan Jurgens and painted by Alex Ross. When the Man of Steel discovers that Galactus may have been responsible for the destruction of his home planet, Krypton, he seeks the Fantastic Four's aid to bring Galactus to justice. But unbeknownst to the heroes, the evil cyborg Superman has plans of his own for Galactus, plans that take an unexpected and dire turn. Although the cyborg Superman offers himself to Galactus as his next herald, Galactus chooses Superman himself. Can the combined forces of the Fantastic Four and the cyborg Superman free the power cosmic enhanced Superman from Galactus's clutches? Spoilers! The Fantastic Four help Superman escape the influence of Galactus and learn the truth about Krypton's fate! The end. But yeah, so this was a pretty big deal at the time, I think. Sort of, kind of. I mean, I don't know. Like, in context, I feel like this is the era of Fantastic Four that I tell everybody not to read because it's written by Chris Claremont. And this is the era of Superman that is winding down. Like, it's the dregs of, you know, the aftermath of, like, you know, it's not, you know, the height of it was, you know, the death of Superman and the funeral for a friend and the return of Superman and all that stuff. And then they kind of rode the wave of that for a long time. And this era of books is like they're practically like right up there on the beach now. Like there's no more wave. Do you know what I mean? And it's about to get good again, like with the Y2K books and all that stuff. But this is, I don't know. I think both these books kind of needed, maybe benefited from an event like this or something to get eyes on both properties or whatever. But
Derek?
Yeah.
Is this before Electric Superman or after?
This is, let me think, 131. This is after Electric Superman.
Okay. I was thinking it was before for some reason.
Yeah, because he's got, this is like, I'm pretty sure this, because after Electric Superman, I think, was right around when I was first going to college. And this is like, I'm practically done with college, like and you know, or at least I'm in my final year or something like that. So it's like this is, I think this is post wedding too, like, or at least right around the same time frame or so. I know this was something that came up in a big bunch of lists for potential discussions of anniversary comic books and stuff, and I know Justin gave his seal of approval. So do you have any like insight, any thoughts on like where you first encountered this? Like was this a big pain in the ass to get because it was a Treasury? Did you know what was the deal with this?
I've only ever read this once before, so I was happy to revisit it when you and I were kind of going over like what to, you know, what anniversaries to cover. I never owned this, and after reading this again, I went to eBay and looked, and I was like, holy crap, the cheapest copy is like $40-something.
I saw ranges. I looked at sold, not what people are asking for, and mm-hmm. the sold ranges seem to be from like 20-something to 75. So it's like there seems to be like a vast disparity. Yeah. Between like, I mean, maybe it's based on condition and it's probably not. Well, I can attest because I did own this at one point. It's probably not easy to keep this thing in good shape just because of how, you know, unless you were sticking it in like a, you know, a nice portfolio and, you know, trying to keep it the best possible condition or whatever. But I feel like the books are so big, like they're kind of like warped by the time you put them out on the stands a little bit. You know what I mean? Because they're just so big and everything. And then just reading through them, right? Like that kind of thing. So, I mean, I remember that. I don't know if I can't remember if this was just part of something I sold in a lot on eBay. Because I remember, like, it's funny because, you know, I know it's like, I love Treasuries and they're cool. And I love seeing stuff like in this big, huge, like sort of widescreen, you know, look to the art and everything's kind of like larger than life and all that stuff. But I get when, you know, it's like the reason why that format died out was because the shop owners didn't know where to store it and it wasn't the same size as comics and all that stuff. And I guess it gives me flashbacks of when I was like basically doing my first great purge and I was selling lots of comics. I would take these flat rate USPS boxes and just dump a bunch of comics in them and send it flat rate. Because it, you know, usually it was like this huge stack of comics and I'd send out, you know, just whatever would fit in the box and send it. But if it was like that Treasury, then I probably had to make some kind of special arrangement. You know what I mean? Because I was like, oh, this doesn't fit in the standard medium flat rate box like all the comics would, you know. So I sort of get that. And then, you know, it kind of makes me lament as well on I wish I had a cool ass way to display stuff like this in my house. Like, and what I mean by that is like, I've gone to stores like, and it kind of sucks because they either tell you they don't know, they don't know what brand of, you know, rack they bought, or they don't care because they're not really the owner or whatever. But I mean, I remember when I went to a couple stores for signings and stuff like that, when I met Todd McFarlane that one time, they had like really nice racks that could hold, you know, it was like you could face the Treasury front wise so you could see the cover, but they had a couple different, you know, it was kind of like a magazine rack, but so, you know, something for larger sized stuff, you know. And to me, I'd be like, oh, I wish I, you know, it's like, I don't want to buy any of these comics in this store, but like, I wish I could somehow take that rack home and like put, you know, Treasuries and magazine sized issues just to display it that way, kind of like how I have my spinner rack and stuff. But I occasionally I do look for like store fixtures and things like that to see if maybe like there's something similar that I could get, but I've never quite found the right thing. Like, it's always like, usually like, I don't know. It's like, I end up going down the rabbit hole and I end up finding something that's like for like preschoolers almost, if that makes sense. Like, you know, like they have like these shelves that are like kind of wooden and it's almost like, you know, oh, it's for like these giant books that are like, you know, for ages 3 and up, you know what I mean? Or 3 and under, or what, you know, whatever it is, right? 3 to 5 or something, you know, something like that. And so I'm like, well, that could work, but that's not, it wasn't quite what I had my heart set on or whatever. So anyway, this, the, you know, struggles of first world problems and collectors and all that kind of nonsense.
Yeah, I've got the only oversized comic I still own is Rusty and Big Guy.
Oh, right. Yeah.
But, like, I bought that at a comic book store in Virginia Beach, and I was like, man, this is so great. It's so huge. And I got home with it, and I was like, well, what do I do with it? I couldn't put it anywhere, and I was afraid it was going to flop over. And, like, mm-hmm. like right now, it's at the top shelf of my closet, and it's covered up by, like, a giant stack of, like, random magazines that have Star Trek on the cover, because I used to collect that stuff, like, religiously. So it's just, I don't think it's seen the light of day for 15 years. Like, it may be, like, you know, eaten up by mice or silverfish. Like, I'm kind of afraid to look at it, but like anyway, back to this comic, like, so I never owned it, but like I feel like I was lucky because a friend of mine, like, he had this. Like, I've mentioned him before a few times on the show over the years. Like, the only comic book characters he really cared for, Spider-Man, Green Lantern, and Superman. Like, I tried over the years to get him interested into other books. I'm like, dude, you should read some Peter David Hulk. Like, I think you'd like it. Like, you would like his sense of humor. He just wasn't interested in any other characters, just those three. And he was very dedicated to those three. So being a Superman fan, he bought this. And I was like kind of surprised because, you know, it's Fantastic Four. And I think I tried to get him to read some, like, John Byrne era Fantastic Four. And he wasn't having it. I guess his curiosity got the better of him. Anyway, I went to his house one day and he had it. Like, he just got back from the shop and he had it. So I sat down and read it and we talked about it. And he, you know, was asking me, like, Fantastic Four questions, and kind of like you, I was like, well, the, you know, the Chris Claremont stuff right now is not that great. It kind of stinks, but, you know, there's better things, you know. Like, I tried to get you off on the better things. And then, like I said, I just never read it again. It's, to me, this is one of those crossovers that I read at the time and I really liked, but I kind of like forgot it existed. And like Silver Surfer Superman or Silver Surfer Green Lantern, like I like those too, but I read them once and I just kind of like forgot they existed. Not because they were bad. I guess I just, you know, I filed them away in my box and just kind of like forgot they existed. I don't know. Sometimes that's weird.
Do you think that's a result of the fact that, like, when they did them as treasuries back in the day, you know, like, it was this huge event? And I mean, even something as far as, like, I feel like DC versus Marvel was a big, huge event, mm-hmm. or Avengers JLA, because of the disparity of time. But it seemed like after DC versus Marvel made them some money, I would argue everything that either led up to that or came after that, like, became somewhat disposable. Because it wasn't as special, because it seemed like every other week there was some prestige book that was like, you know, $4.95 or in this case $9.99 because it's a treasury or whatever it was, right? And so I sort of concur and agree with you, because I'm like, oh yeah, I mean, I read all those, and I have variable opinions about, you know, the different crossovers. Like, some of them I like better than others, some of them I think people get, you know, pwned more than others, or, you know, whatever the deal is. But I get what you're saying, where you're like, they're all pretty decent creative teams and books, and it's always fun to read a team up. But maybe the fact that you were given so much of it, it's like you had two, you know, it's like, oh, you want a cupcake? Here's a cupcake. You're like, wow, I haven't had a cupcake in, like, you know, 5 years. And you're like, this is the most fantastic cupcake ever. But then after that, it's like they kept going, here, have another cupcake, have another cupcake, have another cupcake. And it's just kind of like, all right, like, I've had like 6 of these and I can't distinguish now. I remember the first one that was fantastic, but my memories on the other 5 that you force fed me, like, are maybe not as strong. And this is like the last, I feel like this is like the last cupcake, right? Because they had to make it like treasury sized, and I almost feel like, I don't know if I'm off on this or not, but I feel like almost like this is one of the last big Marvel DC like crossover deals that they had in that era. So this, and again, I mean, it's not to speak to the quality of it. I think I've always kind of liked Dan Jurgens, and I always thought that Art to Bear's inks complemented him like very well. And if you like that kind of 90s style, you know, like I felt like I always thought that, you know, whether it was on Superman or this book we're talking about, like that Art to Bear on Dan Jurgens was like the closest you were going to get to something that looked like Jim Lee in a DC comic. Cause this was back when, you know, Jim Lee was, you know, either exclusively with Marvel or he was just doing, you know, his own, you know, Image type stuff. And, you know, by the time you get to this book, it's probably, you know, post Heroes Reborn and all this stuff, but there, you know, it's like that him becoming, you know, head honcho at DC Comics was way, way off in the horizon. And I think the best thing you had was like those Batman black and whites, and Hush was just, you know, I don't know, in just gestation in somebody's brain, but it, you know, it was nowhere near coming to fruition at this point. So to me, every time I saw, you know, Dan Jurgens and Art to Bear do a book together, I was always kind of like, oh, this is the most Jim Lee looking thing that I thought came out of DC Comics. So I mean, I really, you know, I at least I can say for sure, like the art in this is a style that I'm very fond of. Have Mike or Tony read this before? Like, do you have any either first thoughts or specific thoughts about Superman Fantastic Four?
I'd never read this before. And like, I was like, when you said it, like, I was trying to think, I was like, I knew it existed, but I was like, when did this get released? And I had to look it up, and I was like, oh, 1999. Cause I was like early 2000s, like late 90s. Like it had to be in that like era, like right after Marvel versus DC, where they were, the companies were kind of friendly with each other, and they were like, you know, let's make some money together and doing these things. But I was going to say, like, related to that, like what exactly like happened? Like, did the relationship become toxic again or something, and they just stopped doing them again together?
I feel like, I mean, I know this is, I don't know if this is just heresy or what, or if I'm being, I mean, I think it's just Joe Quesada.
Joe Quesada interview from The Observer in April of 2002. Quesada is quick to note his preference for when the two companies hated each other, saying, you know, if you like DC, then you hated Marvel. If you like Marvel, then you hated DC. While these quotes emphasize his belief that a healthy rivalry makes for a better product, Quesada goes even further with his most shocking line, bluntly stating, what the fuck is DC anyway, and they have Batman and Superman, and they don't know what to do with them. That's like being a porn star with the biggest dick and you can't get it up. What the fuck?
Like, basically, you know, both companies like went into, you know, I mean, this is all this stuff we're talking about now. I mean, I'm pretty sure this 1999 is the tail end of that relationship. You know, I don't have the dates in front of me, but I'm pretty sure this comic represents like the one of the final DC Marvel crossovers of that 90s era. Right. But I'm pretty sure Quesada's on record as, like, because people would ask, like, oh, are you guys ever going to go back to teaming up, you know, do a DC Marvel thing again? And I'm pretty sure, I didn't research this or anything, but I mean, I have distinct memories of when, you know, basically when Quesada came in, and I think Bill Gemmis and, you know, the Ultimate line and all, they were trying to rebrand and do all this stuff to pump Marvel up after the bankruptcy. Like, I'm pretty sure the general attitude was, oh, fuck no, we're not teaming up with DC. Like, fuck that. No, like we're doing our own thing. We don't need DC. You know, like, yeah, I think that was, I think that was the general attitude. And I almost feel like, cause what, Avengers JLA came out in what, 2003, right? So yeah. I feel like, and I kind of think they really had to fight hard to make that happen because of the regime that was in charge at the time. Like, I don't know that it was a hard sell for the DC regime or not, but I always feel like maybe it's a little easier to for Warner to you know, or whoever it was at the time that was in charge to kind of, you know, play ball or whatever. But I'm pretty sure the answer to your question is like, why did this quote unquote gravy train stop? Well, probably a combination of, you know, comics had been busted for a long time from the 90s. But then also, I think this decision that like, we're not doing that anymore over at Marvel, which, I mean, in hindsight, right, it made JLA Avengers more special that you didn't have something like that for like 3 or 4 years. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't just lost in the noise, as Justin was saying, of all these other, you know, crossovers that you end up having, you know. But it's like, I've always kind of dug these, no matter, you know, whether they were lost in the noise or not, you know. So it's like, I think that's just how I'm built. I like team ups. I like seeing characters that don't normally get paired together, work together. I like when people try to come up with clever pairings, like it not just, and I guess what I mean by that is not just, you know, oh, Wolverine sells the most comics, Lobo sells the most comics, let's put them together type thing. Like, I like the idea that it's like, oh no, look, Wolverine has a healing factor, Lobo has a healing factor. Lobo's a parody of Wolverine, you know, and Wolverine is a parody of himself, you know. Like, let's that's the reason why we should put the two guys together. And it's like, oh well, you know, look, it's DC's first superhero. It's really superhero's first superhero, right? And Superman. And then it's Marvel's first family, right? And technically it's the first family of superheroes. So it's these two firsts coming together. Or like the Cyborg, essentially his backstory is he is Reed Richards. He's Reed Richards gone mad and then becomes the Cyborg Superman, right? Like, that's his backstory. Hank Henshaw was this ersatz Reed Richards, and his whole crew went crazy and got irradiated and all slowly died. And at the end of it, you think he, you know, Hank Henshaw is dead too. And then later it gets revealed like, no, his consciousness went out into space and becomes the Cyborg and was responsible for the destruction of Coast City and all the 90s shit. And so you're like, oh, okay, well, there's a perverse sense of logic, a twisted sense of simpatico having the Hank Henshaw Cyborg Superman doing a rival fusion with the remaining three family members of the Fantastic Four when Reed Richards is abducted along with the power cosmic enhanced Superman by Galactus, because you're like, oh, it's this weird, evil, twisted version of Reed teaming up with the rest of the family. Do you know what I mean? And that, you know, that's something like that. I'm like, I can, you know, I can give kudos to that and appreciation to that, because I think it's clever, right? Like, I mean, you know me, I'm a Superman mark. I'm a Superman fanboy. When I first read this, I was butthurt that, you know, that Superman gets, you know, kind of mind zonked by Galactus pretty early on in this, and that's part, you know, a major part of the plot. But I guess if you look at the era of Superman, this is the post-crisis Superman. This is a Superman that's not as powerful as the pre-crisis Superman, which is why the Superman animated series that Franklin Richards is most likely watching is the Superman that needs a rebreather and needs a fucking spacesuit to go out into space and all this stuff that I fucking can't stand, right? I mean, they even go as far to say, oh, now that Superman's got the power cosmic, he can traverse, you know, the spaceways. And I'm like, to fuck, like, Superman can traverse the spaceways without your fucking power cosmic. But if you strictly look at post-crisis Superman and how much he's been powered down, it's very evident in this story, like, where those limits are, because one, the power cosmic enhances him. When he teamed up with Silver Surfer was overmatched Superman in that Marvel DC crossover. Surfer was more powerful than him. So if Surfer's more powerful than him, ergo, I mean, it must be, you know, a piece of cake for Galactus to then, you know, manipulate and or control Superman, right? Because Galactus is the one who gave Surfer his damn powers in the first place, right? So you've got that going on in terms of that. But another aspect that I find interesting is, you know, Superman post-crisis is not as intelligent as he was pre-crisis. Like, pre-crisis Superman could probably hold a conversation with Reed Richards and be on equal footing scientifically with Reed Richards. But post-crisis Superman comes into the room in this and is like, I'm impressed, you know, how all this Galactus tech works, Reed, because I don't. You know, and so, like, there's it does show you those moments of delineation between, you know, this version of Superman. And it's also uniquely positioned because I think, like I said, for me, this is just my opinion, but the Superman books were about to get really good. And I feel like as they were going to the whole, like, Y2K era and the, you know, some of the stuff I had you guys read, you know, maybe, you know, with Ending Battle, you know, finishing that era off or whatever, like he was powered up, like, physically, but I think also some of that scientific smarts, some of it came back in that era as well. But in this book, I think that the time frame of it, it's more that he's, you know, he's more the Smallville, you know, he's the guy that, you know, is a farm boy and a newspaper man, and there's not, he's not going to be like having a conversation with Reed Richards over, you know, scientific beakers and chemicals and shit like that. Whereas I'm pretty sure the pre-crisis Superman could have made his own formulas all by himself. I mean, I did write down this note that proves, like, what, where this falls in their continuity, at least, because they talk about Pier 4, and then Franklin's nanny at the time was Caledonia, or babysitter, what have you. So that kind of puts it between issues 12 and 13 of that Chris Claremont volume of Fantastic Four, you know, after they came back from the Heroes Reborn universe. For the Superman continuity, it kind of puts it like, I don't know, you just have to look at what's going on that month. And that month, it was the final chapter of the Doomsday Wars, which was like the third prestige format Superman miniseries where, like, Brainiac mind takes over Doomsday or what have you, and then Action Comics 750. So, like, that's kind of ish where most people put this, even though it's a little harder to, you know, definitively place where it takes place for Superman and stuff like that. And then since I'm going, I'll just keep going through some of my notes. But, like, I think my favorite part of this, and, you know, this is just, you know, me being Superman fanboy or whatever, like, I love the part where the FF's internal defenses come to life and start attacking because the cyborg messes with them or whatever. And so Superman blocks a giant beam blast that's about to hit Franklin. And then Franklin has the expository dialogue that says, Dad says those beams can cut through adamantium and you shrugged them off like nothing. And I'm like, that's right, posers. Wolverine's fucking claws can't do shit. So that's me. If anybody has any questions about the cyborg Superman and whatever became of him after this, I don't know how he, you know, got out of being a bar of soap or whatever that he transforms to at the end of this. But I mean, he does come back. So, I mean, usually there was some, you know, like Superman vibrates him into nothingness or he's stuck in the Phantom Zone or so. You know, usually there was some reason why cyborg Superman was taken out of commission. So it could fit into this if you wanted it to, like part of him coming back and Superman being surprised that he's come back into his life. I think within like the Man of Steel 100, I think is the next time cyborg Superman appears after this. Like, I think he shows up and Superman's like, where the hell did you come from? You know, and you know, so it could just be, you know, that he's shocked because he should be a bar of soap, or it could be he's shocked because he's supposed to be in the Phantom Zone or whatever. But you could sort of make it work either way if you really wanted to.
Yeah, this is like my first like exposure story, and I mean, it's kind of well known that I like Superman, and I have no problem with the Fantastic Four, but I'm not the biggest like follower of them like Derek. And again, it's nothing of like any kind of hatred towards the characters. They're just not the characters or the books I follow. Upon reading this, it was definitely a fun story. It obviously had to be kind of a one and done because of like who's involved. I mean, it's, you know, a rival fusion, so you kind of have to tidy things up at the end, so it can't be like, you know, next month, you know, Galactus talks to Lex Luthor, you know. And I definitely like, you know, that it definitely had a lighthearted feel at certain points, like the gravitas of like the whole thing that, you know, Superman is the herald of Galactus, or even that like Cyborg Superman is, you know, plotting in the background, and you know, even Reed being like in prison, is still kind of counterbalanced in a way that, like, it doesn't seem grim, and that's nice, you know, that's nice. It's like, you know, things are bad, but there, it's still like, I wouldn't say so much lighthearted, but it's presented in a way that you're not just like, all right, who's gonna die, you know? It's
like, well, yeah, there's big stakes, but I would concur. This is not a grim, dark story or anything by any means.
Yeah, and I appreciated that. My avatar is the Cyborg Superman for two reasons. One, I like Derek. I like the little parallel that Hank Henshaw, as far as Dan Jurgens, Dan Jurgens was like, I don't know if he was really parodying or probably doing at least a parallel to the Fantastic Four with Hank Henshaw. You know, it's like, what would happen if the Fantastic Four like fucked up? What if like it did not go to plan? And that's basically who Hank Henshaw was. So having him in the story, you know, makes sense, you know, especially if you're going to have the people he's pretty much his origin is based off of. And also on the flip side, when I saw like, because when he first arrives, he's kind of reforming a little bit, you know, he's like kind of like, you know, aha, I'm here. And then like when he's finally in like, you know, his refreshed state, I guess you would say, like, I was like, my first thought was like, ah, crap, it's Superman Doomsday costume, the fucking red one with, I never was a fan of that costume. I was happy to see him, though, because in most Galactus stories, like, my favorite Galactus stories are when they get across that Galactus is not a bad guy. He's not a good guy. He is a force of nature. That's his whole thing. He's above such petty ideas of, like, evil and good. You know, if he's about to eat your planet, of course he's evil. Doesn't have any, like, thoughts about you. He's not sitting there saying, like, these poor people or, you know, like, if only I could eat something else. No, he eats, he moves on. He eats, he moves on. He's like the wind. And I think they did a good job of displaying it here. Like, when he does turn him into a bar soap, it's just, like, the audacity. And he's like, I'm just like you. I want the same things as you, Galactus. And he's like, okay, well, I'll give you perfection. You're a perfect bar of soap. And you know, it's that, like, that kind of cosmic justice that just desserts, you know, is like, you don't get to pick who Galactus's herald is. Galactus chooses who his herald is. Mm. And, you know, that was kind of a cool little thing. And the Fantastic Four had a good, like, run on it. The Thing was the Thing. Johnny was Johnny. Sue was Sue. I mean, you know, they're for Jurgens writing characters he doesn't normally write, I think he was on point. About the only hiccup I saw was Galactus. It seemed like he should have recognized Reed more a little bit, because he just kind of calls them humans. And I'm like, you know, Reed, he fucked up your one of your chances to go, like, you know, destroy Earth. He also was like at your tribunal for destroying the Skrull homeworld and stuff like that. Like, you know, Reed Richards, don't call him human, you know.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's like, you know, I feel like Reed and Galactus had more of a, like, sort of personal relationship than they kind of exhibit here. Like, you know, I mean, Reed does say, like, oh, like, I, you know, I have a healthy dose of respect for Galactus. But, like, you know, yeah, like, Reed saved his life. I mean, like, multiple times, I think, by this point. So, I mean, but, you know, it was still good. Like, I'm not a, like, you know, a super big fan of Dan Jurgens' writing. Like, I love his art. Like, I think the art in this book, it looks awesome. But sometimes I feel like, yeah, like, there's a sort of impersonal touch to his writing or something. I don't know how best to describe it. But, like, I don't know. Even when he was writing, like, you know, Ben Reilly Spider-Man, I felt like there was sort of a, like, the detachment from it, I guess. Maybe because he wasn't too interested in doing that. But I don't know, like, I kind of see it here, too, where he kind of, you know, has a, like, you know, the relationship between the Fantastic Four and Superman seem fine. But, yeah, like, Galactus and Reed, like, seem a little detached from each other, I guess.
Sometimes I guess I see what you're saying, because, like, sometimes it's like, I have a certain voice in my head for the cyborg Superman, and then sometimes I feel like because they're putting him in conflict with, you know, they're trying to show like, oh yeah, he is an anti-Reed Richards that's teaming up with them, but for some reason, like that, the whole thing of like where that she puts the invisible force field between Cyborg Superman and the Thing, and he's like, didn't figure you for the type to hide behind a skirt, Grim. And I'm just like, that doesn't really sound like the Cyborg Superman. So I kind of get what you're saying. Like every once in a while, there's something where the line serves the story, but it might not necessarily serve the character quite well. And maybe that's what you're getting at, where you see like something impersonal, because you're like, look, I just got to get through this page, and the easiest way for me to establish the cyborg is a bad guy, and he's ruffling feathers, is by calling Susan Richards a skirt, you know. And I'm just like, what? It's like, he's not like one of the Newsboy Legion. He's the fucking Cyborg Superman. Like, why? Or, he, you know, even more than that, he's not Lobo, right? Like, I mean, if that was Lobo and he's like, okay, Grim, like, I didn't take you to be the type that would, you know, hide behind a skirt, I'd be like, oh, well, yeah, Lobo would say something like that. But I'm like, does the Cyborg Superman say something like does, or even think of it this way, does an anti-Reed Richards say skirt, you know? And I was just like, I don't know. But yeah, and I mean, that's just, I mean, this is kind of like over picky, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, I don't hold that against the entire book. It's not like I'm like, oh, the book is ruined now, you know, like the book is fine, but I do notice those things. It's not a perfect book, as opposed to Cyborg Superman as a bar of soap. It's not a perfect book, right?
It's just the wording. If Henshaw had said something like, or what is brash as you Thing, I wouldn't think a woman would have to fight your battles for you. You know,
there,
like,
yeah, yeah. I mean, see, easily rectified. And see that, I mean, to me, I'd be like, you know, fair point is fair. Like, I would accept that, right? Instead of it being kind of, I don't know, it just seems like so lowbrow for the cyborg. And I don't view the cyborg as lowbrow, you know, but maybe that's just me.
Maybe that was the point. Like, if he was in the Fantastic Four's, like, files and stuff, he probably knows about being in his, like, you know, rivalry with, like, the Yancey Street gang. So maybe he's, like, coming down to Ben's level by saying skirt, like, derogatory.
Okay. 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 That's a fine, no prize retcon. Like, I mean, that if he's absorbing Yancey Street lingo and trying to speak to Ben on his own level, like, that, I guess I could accept that too, if I felt like there was something that indicated that. But you know, I don't know.
Derek, how did you feel about Superman's Herald form? Because I remember when I saw that, I was a little disappointed. I mean, I get it, right? Like, Norrad becomes Silver Surfer, Silver Superman gets like this gold form, so I get it, you know, silver and gold. But I remember seeing it, and it's a very nice like double page spread where he's like fully enveloped with the power cosmic, and he's gold and shining. But I'm like, oh, that's it. Like, I mean, I wasn't expecting anything like ugly or complicated, like morgue or anything. But I was like, oh, he's just gold. Well, that's easy for Jurgens to draw, but it's kind of, I don't know. Like, I guess I was expecting something a little more. I don't know what, but I wasn't really expecting like that, I guess. I don't know. Like, how do you feel about that?
I don't know. I mean, I see your point. You know what I mean? Like that, you know, maybe you'd want someone to maximize their imagination when it comes to Superman being a herald of Galactus. But maybe that's overthinking it, you know, like maybe it just, you know, it's like, all right, well, you know, I'm going to make Superman a version of the Silver Surfer that doesn't have a surfboard. And how about we just make him gold? You know what I mean? And it's like, okay. Like, I mean, it has a little vibe of, you know what it kind of reminds me of? Like a precursor to the DC 1 million, like, super, you know, the Superman that's in the sun. You know what I mean? Like, where it's like, that's, I mean, It's not the same, but it's kind of, to me, it's a little similar. So like, I get it. It's like, or even, you know, what they would call at the end of Our Worlds at War, like sun dipped Superman, you know, it's like he goes into the sun and gets his, you know, Super Saiyan power up or whatever you want to call it, you know, like, so it's like, there are things like that where it's like, I would imagine, you know how we had the conversation about like Lupin fans and, James Bond fans, and if the Aston Martin's not a part of it, then it's not James Bond. I'm sure that to like Superman by the book Superman fans, this doesn't mean it, like even in terms of like, I don't know, stupid shit like buying original art, like if Superman does not dress like, if he doesn't have the tights and the cape and the short hair, do you know what I mean? Like, then all of a sudden it's not Superman. And like, sometimes I kind of laugh at that because I'm like, fuck you, he isn't. Like, he's Superman. Like, what are you talking about? But sometimes, like, maybe with that kind of attitude, like, you could see, like, not just your disappointment, but just somebody who, you know, I mean, maybe they'd want a gold Superman, but a gold Superman that had like the fucking trunks and the cape and all that. I mean, I don't know. But I mean, to me, I think that would be kind of silly, too. Right. Like, so it's like, I don't like, what do I think of it? I'm like, I kind of agree with you. I mean, it's like it's not exactly awe inspiring, but it's not bad either. It's just kind of it serves, again, kind of like the dialogue moving the story along, like that design, just it serves the purpose of the story, it gets the job done, but is it something that will be forever remembered in the annals of Superman costume design history? Probably not.
Maybe it was just like burnout too, because like, I mean, the death of Superman hadn't happened that long ago when this came out, so like, he just had four new Supermen. You had Superman in his black outfit. You had long hair Superman. You had Parasite Superman.
Hunter Prey Superman. Like, there were a lot of tweaks on that. I mean, and that's kind of what I'm getting at. It's like, to some people, like that even just, you know, I guess it comes back to that thing. It's like, how many things can you strip away from Thor before he's not Thor anymore? And how many things do you strip away from Superman before he's not Superman anymore? But at least in this case, it's part of the story, right? He's trying to strip him of his humanity and just serve as a herald of Galactus because he knows how powerful the Kryptonian form is, you know, under a yellow sun, right? So he's just like, oh, okay, I'm going to use the Kryptonian to seek out my worlds. But I mean, I guess, you know, if I'm going to be all Superman fanboy about it, I can at least say, well, in his defense, right? I mean, all it takes is for Reed to say the word Lois and a couple other words of encouragement before it's like Silver Surfer had to have like seven monologues with Alicia and get punched up the side of his head by Ben Grimm and all kinds of stuff before he ended up turning on Galactus. But it took Superman like all of like a word and the first planet that had life on it for him to be like, no, fuck this, I'm not doing it anymore. I mean, in that regard, I guess that speaks highly to his character as well.
I was thinking it would be also kind of funny if this had happened in a post Snyderverse like continuity, because like you would have all these aliens like, why is this asshole got hope on his chest? He's bringing Galactus. As far as that, I kind of echo Justice's thoughts of like the costume, like not the costume, but the form being a little underwhelming. But I mean, to your point, you know, that's not really the impetus of the story. You know, it's not to give Superman a cool new form. I get that, but I also see Justice's side of it too. I kind of like, oh, it'd be kind of nice if you had like a toga or something. I don't know. But like,
does it matter? Like, would the no prize be that it just makes the sequences with Superman in his traditional costume at the beginning and especially at the end where he gives Franklin his cape more meaningful? Like that seeing a sterile Superman without the traditional Superman features, like, you know, what is it like? What's the phrase? Like a fondness comes from, you know, absence or something like that, you know, like, so it's like, because it's absent for the large portion of the middle of the story, that when it, when he finally returns and that big splash with the entire Fantastic Four, and Johnny Storm's like, hey, you want to make it the Fantastic Five? Like, you want to join us? Like, that would kick so much ass. You know what I mean? Like, it makes his triumphant return to his true form, like, all the more special, I guess. I don't know. That would be my no prize or my argument.
Gladys was unknowingly doing hashtag not my Superman.
Yeah.
Oh, I was also going to say, there was one funny point that I kind of got a little chuckle at, and it's just my own dark sense humor, I guess. It's like Galactus was like looking at him. He was like, oh, you may well indeed be my most perfect herald, and I am, you know, so pleased with you. And like two pages later, he's like, I have been betrayed again. And I was like, come on, Galactus, this has happened more than once. Come on, dude.
And you gotta be used to it by now, Big G, right?
Find a better way to find heralds, I think. Yeah, but no, like, I did enjoy this though. Like, you know, I this was something, like I said, I hadn't read it. Like, I thought the art was beautiful, and yeah, like I immediately, like, oh, I was like, oh, of course, like, you know, Cyborg Superman would, like, you know, take Reed Richards' place on the Fantastic Four, because he, you know, he is a parody of Reed Richards almost. So, like, yeah, I did enjoy that, and I did laugh at his, like, ultimate fate, where he was like, I demand, like, perfection, Galactus, and Galactus, yeah, turns him into a little, like, what is it, like a microchip or something, or like
it's like a piece of metal. It's like a perfect,
yeah, like
I think Reed says, like a unblemished, like, perfect piece of metal.
Yeah, he's like, when Reed's like, oh, like, you know, he was being, Galactus was really literal, like, you know, so.
When this came out, I remember arguing at the time with a buddy of mine that Cyborg Superman shouldn't be in this, and Dr. Doom should take his place, and then Dr. Doom should try to steal Superman's powers. But, like, the old me is like, nah, that would be going, like, back to that well, like, too many times, you know, Doom stealing the Surfer's power, like, that old trick, or, you know, stealing Beyonder's power. I'm like, have we seen that before? Like, maybe, you know, given the, you know, the origin of Hank Henshaw, where it's like an homage to the FF, like, I think, you know, old me is like, yeah, that's a better usage. Like, what did teenage me know? Like, you're a dumbass.
I think Juergens was really having fun writing the Fantastic Four. I think he had been writing Superman for so long. I mean, he wrote him for, like, pretty much most of the 90s, that, like, getting to stretch his muscles a little bit and write, like, completely, like, you know, different characters, because he did the parody, but he gets to write the real deal now. And that, I think that was probably fun for him.
Yeah, and I think my other favorite moment in this was, you know, after all the confrontation and smack talk that Cyborg and Ben Grimm go through while they're on their adventures, like, it does pay off finally, because he doesn't get to say it's clobber in time for the whole book, because he's getting zapped by Galactus and getting interrupted the whole time. But the best part is when he taps Cyborg Superman on the shoulders and then smashes him, you know. And so I was like, oh, that's cool that, you know, Ben Grimm got his moment to shine in this, you know, and that's his shining moment as far as I'm concerned in this whole little adventure.
Yeah, and I would say, like, the moment, like, I don't think they really say it, but they do say it in a way. But I think it's like, you know, a lot of people will go with, like, oh, it's Lois, or oh, it's the Superman doll reminding him of his old self, or it's just like the hope of Franklin Richards, like, you know, like, oh, Superman's my favorite. But, like, you know, in that panel where he smacks Ben Grimm on purpose, as it's revealed, like, he says never again. And I think, like, it's also him saying, like, you know, because at that point he's still thinking that Galactus destroyed Krypton. And he's like, I was going along with this. And, like, no, never again am I going to, like, sacrifice a whole nother. Like, he realized he was betraying his own self, too. Like, so I think that's, like, kind of, like, you know, an important thing for Superman, that his core values are so strong that even that was helping him, like, you know, awaken.
Yeah.
It wasn't just, yeah.
I always laugh when, like, you know, in Marvel specifically, like, when they treat, like, DC as if it's, like, a fictional property, like, in that universe, basically, like, you know, like, Franklin obviously watches a Superman cartoon or whatever, but, like, there's a lot of other, like, references I've seen over the years where I think there's, like, I forgot if it's an issue of Spider-Man or something where, like, it's like, I think it's like that Jason McIndale Hobgoblin, and and he sees like some kind of someone using some kind of bat drone or something, and he's kind of like, hey, like, aside from that movie guy, I'm the only one who uses bat motifs, like, you know. So like, when they say that Batman and Superman are just cartoon or movie characters in the Marvel universe, and maybe it's like vice versa in DC, but I mean, like, you know, at this point they were clearly going for, oh, these are just like, you know, that's Earth 616 and DC is like Earth, you know, whatever. So like, we know each other and we've traveled to each other's Earths and whatever. And like, you know, that we exist in other, you know, in the multiverse, but they just ignore each other. So,
and they don't spend a lot of time dwelling on how it comes to be. I mean, some people point to Superman, you know, after he fends off those terrorists and gets the quote unquote message from Jor-El, which we later find out was something that the cyborg Superman planted, you know, that says that Galactus had something to do with the destruction of Krypton. He does says, and to find them, I need access. And if you're just reading the story, it's like, oh, yeah, he needs access to the other Earth. But if you've been following all these, you know, myriad crossovers, you know that what's his face, Axel Asher, who is named Access, is like that character that's the Marvel and DC character where he can like, you know, he's got portals between the worlds. And I think he's got like a girlfriend on fucking DC Earth and a girlfriend on Marvel Earth or some shit. So it's like, if you want that to be what Superman did, Superman flew, found Access and got zapped over, even though that scene's like not in the comic at all, you know?
I also like kind of like the interplay where like Galactus, you know, finds Krypton and it's already going to be destroyed. Like, you know, he actually doesn't eat Krypton. It's what happened to Krypton was going to happen to Krypton. I kind of like the characterization that Galactus was not going to go hunt Superman. He was just going to wait for him to come to him. He was like, at some point this will happen and then I'll get what I want. You know, that is a very cosmic mindset, I guess you would say, you know. It's like,
yeah,
you know, if the mountain won't go to Muhammad, you know, like if Muhammad won't go to the mountain, you know, let you know, Muhammad come to the mountain, you know. Is like he was so sure that Superman was going to come to him, he wasn't really concerned about it, if that makes sense, you know, because he's Galactus. On nitpicks aside, though, I did enjoy it. It's definitely, like I said, when I said it was a one and done, sometimes it's really good just to read that kind of story, even if it's like a big story. And I echo Mike's, you know, enjoyment of the art. The art's really, Juergens, he's not underrated by any stretch of the imagination, but I think it is really kind of interesting, like, how he doesn't get as much credit as he should for, like, being the guy who drew Superman for, like, you know, how, like, it was over a decade, right?
Yeah, or probably. I mean, close to, yeah, it. I mean,
yeah, he, like, to me, he's like Juergens and Aparo were like kind of running neck and neck for me. You know, it was like they may have not drawn like the flashiest, but they just for the longest time, Juergens Superman was what Superman looked like. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. No, I think if you're comparing Juergens Superman to Aparo Batman, that's a high praise indeed.
According to the latest report from falsifiedstats.com, there are currently 12 million active comic book podcasts clogging up the internet superhighway, and 2.3 million new comic book podcasts are being created every single day. That's a lot to choose from, and yeah, it can get a bit overwhelming, especially since most of them all sound the same. You know, it's usually 1 to 5 guys, and they're sitting around, and they're just talking about their top picks from all the new issues that hit the shelves that week. If you're looking for something a little different, then let me tell you about Mike's Comic Shop Roadshow. Mike travels the globe and visits comic shops along the way, talking to the owners, the managers, or really just whomever happens to be minding the store that day. And it's through these conversations that you'll meet some wonderful people and learn how comic shops are run in places like Murfreesboro, Illinois, Pearl City, Hawaii, and Liverpool, New South Wales, Australia. But even more, Mike takes a comic book recommendation from each shop. He reads the comic, and then he gets together with a special guest or guests to discuss the comic in question. So do yourself a favor and check out Mike's Comic Shop Roadshow, a truly unique comic book podcast among billions of the same old, same old. Find it now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Comic books in my hands, man. The smell of back issue pages, man. Comic shops, I've seen my share, man. I've been everywhere.
I'm Mike, and I approve this message.
Any other fantastic thoughts?
I was happy to revisit this, and Superman's one of those characters, like, Derek is the Superman guy. I've always really liked Superman, and he always seems to cross over with, like, the weirdest people, and I'm usually there for it. Like, whether it's Superman and Aliens, or Madman, or The Darkness, or Thundercats, like, I read all those, because I'm like, Superman and Darkness, well, that's weird. Like, how does that work? Superman and Thundercats, oh, I have to read this. Like, oh my god. But, like, you know, I'm pretty sure I've still got all of those, but for whatever reason, I guess I was just dragging my ass, and, you know, the oversized aspect of this, I was kind of like, I don't know, where am I going to put it? And, you know, it's, you know, more money than usual and all that stuff. Like, and now I'm like, oh, I wish I could have, like, bought it at the time, because now I don't feel like paying $20 to $75 for this. But yeah, like I said, I'd only read this, like, when it first came out, and I was happy to revisit it because I still think it's really great.
Yeah, I enjoyed this a lot. I don't know if anybody was going to ask this or not, but this will be my final word on the issue is, have I ever encountered any original art from Fantastic Four or from Superman Fantastic Four? The answer is yes. This page has been on eBay since I've been in the hobby. And at the time, it was like one of those pages where you'd look at it, you'd see the price, and you'd laugh at it. And now I've been in the hobby so long where I don't know if that price is that laughable anymore, but it's still kind of like a, honey, I can't sell this because no one will buy it from me because no one will pay that price. But yeah, so that's where I'll end it. And I enjoyed revisiting this. I mean, this is, you know, like Tony said, nitpicks aside, this is a pretty fun story. So and man, I can't believe it's 25 years old. All right. If you guys have any other comments, questions, and or concerns, you can reach us at fanholespodcast@gmail.com if you want to send some angry, angry emails. You can check out all the backlog of episodes of Comics Motherfucker, Do You Read Them? Over on the Blogspot. That's fanholespodcast.blogspot.com. We're on all kinds of social media. We're on Tumblr. We're on Twitter/X. We're on Facebook, Instagram. We appreciate all the likes, hearts, shares, and retweets that we receive. And we can be streamed. We're on Apple Podcasts. We're on Google Play while it's still around, Spotify, Amazon Music. And until the next time, this is going to be Derek WC, signing off.
Hey, it's Mike, signing off.
This is Justin.
This is Tony, guys. And remember, you too can defeat the Galactus if he just takes his time setting up his tablet.
Square eyes. I love when people remember that Galactus has square eyes.
That's why he hates planets. He hates everything that's round. All this roundness in the universe sickens me.
I must destroy the roundness.
No, grapes, my weakness.
Is this the only page you've encountered, Derek?
Yeah, as far as I know. I mean, I always kind of looked at it as a joke. Every time I would go to it, I'd be like, oh yeah, that page, ha ha ha, nobody's going to buy it. And then now these days with the prices the way they are, it's kind of like, well, I don't know that the price is that much of a joke, but it's still kind of a joke.
Dagnabbit.
I always wonder, like, I wonder if, like, if sometimes, like, I know that some people are just greedy and they're kind of stupid and they think they could sell it for that much, or...
I think sometimes it's like this thing where somebody's forcing them to sell it and they're like, sorry, honey, it just won't sell, you know, like
right.